Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
At the track, the wall, she's gone.
Welcome to our Braves Recap Show. It's your first chance to react to the Braves and Astros.
2020 was last year. This is a whole different team.
The Braves Recap Show is on. Brought to you by the Georgia Department of Public Health. The Georgia Department of Public
Health. Welcome, welcome, welcome on in. It is the Atlanta Baseball Postgame Show. A little flashback to our World Series appearance a couple of years ago. Maybe this was a sign of things to come. The Atlanta Braves, in epic fashion this evening, come back from 10-4 down to win 11-10. What if I told you that the Braves and the White Sox scored a combined 43 runs in the first two games of this series? Yeah. How about that? Not exactly a pitching clinic from Spencer Strider last night or Bryce Elder tonight, but it has been two wild games. Last night, 13-9. Tonight, 11-10. And that is, again, 43 combined runs in these first two games. Wow. The White Sox are bad, man. Well, the Braves are bad, too. We know that. They now move to 12 games under 500 and move back to 500 at home at 31-31. Drake Baldwin did play hero tonight, getting across the final two runs of the game to take it from 10-9 to 11-10. We've been on this Atlanta Baseball postgame show a couple of times this season talking about how Drake Baldwin has played hero, and he did so again tonight. Acuna got in the mix. Albies got in the mix. Nacho Alvarez got in the mix. Michael Harris hit another home run. So, again, this offense has scored 20 runs in the last two games. The problem? They've given up 23. 10 tonight and 13 last night. That is absolutely bonkers. So I'm not sure what's in the water these past couple of nights at Truist Park, but it has been an absolute bash ball affair these last couple of games. Bryce Elder did his best Spencer Strider impression. He went 4 2/3, 9 hits, 8 earned runs, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts on 84 pitches. Y'all, his ERA, 6.29. Wow. Talk about just throwing guys out there because you need them. We'll talk about Spencer Strider and what happened last night here in just a minute and let you hear from Grant McCauley. But I want to hear from you. If you're driving home from Truist Park tonight, how fun was that? Did you stay for the whole thing? How fun was that to watch? Because I bet you this felt pretty good after what happened with Spencer Strider and giving up 13 runs last night. So if you're on your way home from the ballpark, tell me what it was like. I want to hear from you. 404-726-0929. Or does this win and last night's loss just make you more frustrated about what could have been? How do you feel? That's what I want to talk to you about. 404-726-0929. And also, of course, you don't have to be driving home from Truist Park. If you're listening to me on 92.9 The Game, driving around the A or the great state of Georgia, or if you were just watching the game at home in the comfort of your personal studio, like I was here in the Kia Studios, I want to hear from you too. So Braves country, this win tonight, are you able, in a lost season like this, are you able to just sit back and enjoy a win like this? Like, can you still revel in the epic comeback nature of this win, 11-10 over the White Sox? Or is it just frustrating to you because of the way that the season has gone? I don't know. I think it's tough because you see this game, you're like, man, we've scored 20 runs in two games, but we've somehow managed to give up 23. How is that even possible? Well, when your two starters do what they do over the last couple of nights, it's unfortunate. Spencer Strider's a whole other kit and caboodle. Bryce Elder, we know what's going to happen. He'll help us out. He'll pitch out the string. And that will, I would say, probably be the last time we see him in a Braves uniform, I would think. they wouldn't bring him back next year with his, again, 6.25 ERA. You can't have that in the rotation. So, again, Braves country, where do you stand? 404-726-0929. This is about as fun of a win as you're going to have. You were down 10-4. You come all the way back despite Bryce Elder giving up 8 earned runs in 4 2/3 innings, and you're able to come back and win. And yes, Raisel Iglesias even got a save. How about that? I thought the first pitch he threw was going to go out of the ballpark, though, honestly. Oh, boy. He's a mile a minute, isn't he? So let me know. Like, I just, you're not going to get too many more wins like this, I wouldn't think, for the rest of the season, right? These types of wins, these really fun back and forth slugfest affairs to the tune of, again, 43 runs scored by both teams in a 2-game sample is just astronomically high. And you won tonight in comeback fashion. Or does seeing this just make you more frustrated, more angry about the state of the team and what could have been and still being 12 games under 500? It's fine either way. I'm certainly not going to sit here and judge you. If you come on the air and you say, Turtle, as fun as this was, it just makes me wish what could have been. I'm right there with you. This team, again, I've said this all season long, they have had the third highest odds to win the World Series out of any team to enter the season. And this is where you stand, 12 games under 500 on August 19th. It's unfortunate. But at the same time, again, you don't get too many like this one. These ones are special. You remember these. Remember that time we faced the White Sox, and in the first two games we scored 43 runs combined, and Spencer Strider and Bryce Elder combined to give up like 18 runs and 6 innings pitched total? Yeah, remember that? That was fun. And then we won, and Drake Baldwin continued to show why he's a stud. Yeah, that's what you're going to remember about these series. But unfortunately, it does come in a lost season, or what is, for all intents and purposes, a lost season. I guess technically anything could happen, but the overarching outcome is it is what it is at this point. 57-69. Again, you move to back to 500 at home, 31-31. And tomorrow you try to get a series win and go over 500 at home, back to where you rightfully belong. So again, 404-726-0929. It is the Atlanta Baseball Postgame Show with yours truly, Chris Thomas Turtle, taking you up until the top of the hour. That's table option number one. Weigh in on tonight's game. How do you feel? More frustrated, or are you just excited that the Braves got a win specifically in this type of fashion? Door number two is the conversation we were having on Chris Thomas tonight to start the show. At 404-726-0929. Spencer Strider, over his last 3 starts, has given up in 11 innings pitched, 30 hits. Yes, that you heard me right. Do not adjust your radio. 3-0, 30 hits and 20 earned runs in his last 11 innings pitched. Something's got to give. So what do you do? In my opinion, the Braves have 3 options. Door number one, you let him figure it out. Just whatever. It's a lost season. We're not sending him down to Gwinnett, obviously. We're not, you know, whatever. We got to let him ride and try to figure this thing out. Door number two, do you put him in the bullpen? Try to let him figure it out there. You take the stress of multiple innings away. Maybe the fastball goes up a tick. Maybe the mechanics get straightened out. And maybe you find out you have a really good option in the back end of the bullpen and something to consider for the future. We know other guys have done it right here in the A, Smoltz. In New York, Mariano Rivera was a converted starter. There's a lot of guys that have done it in their career. Maybe that's Spencer Strider's calling after all. Or door number three, you sit him. You sit him down for the rest of the season and you just say, hey, listen, it is what it is. He's clearly not himself. I don't know if he's not 100%. I don't know if something's bothering him. Maybe it's mental. Maybe it's physical. Maybe it's a combination of the two. So what would you do? Put on your general manager's hat, Braves country. If you're Alex Anthopoulos, if you're Snit, if you're the higher ups in Braves country, what are you doing with Spencer Strider? Door number one, nothing. Let him finish it out. Door number two, bullpen. Or door number three, you sit his behind and let him heal and rest up and prepare for a very, very important offseason. Let's hear Sonny from Grant McCauley. He joined Dukes and Bell earlier today, and they asked him that same question. What is going on with Spencer Strider? Welcome on into the 9 o'clock hour. It is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you till the top of the hour. Busy, busy 9 o'clock hour about to come your way. In case you missed it, Bryce Elder followed up Spencer Strider's performance last night with a doozy of his own, giving up Oren 8 earned runs. Wow. Just when you thought things might be clicking in the Braves' direction, no. A stark reminder of this is a bad baseball team. And they just had a nice little stretch where they won 7 of 8. But do not confuse that with this team being good. Woof. Wow. Been a tough couple of nights here against a 40-win Chicago White Sox team. Ouch. All right. Well, one team that should be pretty good this year is Georgia Tech and ACC Network's Roddy Jones did stop by the morning shift today, wanted to bring you that conversation we hit on UGA with Jeff Sentell. So let's give the ACC a little love. The first thing the guys asked Roddy, guys and gals, I should say, with Allie Mack in the fold, is what games are you most excited for in week one, Roddy?
Well, first off, guys, thanks for having me. The biggest one, I think, is Clemson LSU. And that's, I mean, it's not breaking news to anybody. I just think those are two teams that could be in the college football playoff. In the case of Clemson, probably should be in the college football playoff. And then LSU has sort of been in this, I don't know if it's a purgatory, but they're in this weird place with Brian Kelly where they can win 9 games, but they can't get over the hump and win 10. And they went to that SEC championship game and got mollywhopped by Georgia a few years ago. But LSU expects more. Like, the last 3 head coaches at LSU have all won national championships, and Nick Saban, Les Miles, and Ed Ogeron. And 2 of those guys, we don't think a whole lot of. Like, 2 of those guys didn't get another job after the LSU job. So it's one of those programs that you can't luck up into a national championship, and I'm not saying that, but the talent is so good that every once in a while you'll have one of those special teams like Ed Ogeron did in 2019. So LSU with Garrett Nussmeier, a really good skill position group, Harold Perkins and Whit Weeks on defense. Like, it should be a team that should compete at the top of the SEC. But there's always, or right now, there's questions around how much will the defense continue to improve. They improved last year under Blake Baker. They've got to take another step. How do you replace 4 offensive linemen, one of which was a top 10 pick? And despite having Garrett Nussmeier, who could be the first quarterback taken in the draft this upcoming year, I think there's some legit questions about where they fit in the SEC, especially with Georgia and Bama and what we expect out of Texas and the potential of Oklahoma and A&M with Mike Elko building there. So there's a lot of questions about where LSU fits. And then Clemson is the hands-down favorite in the ACC. Like, they should win the league. I'm not saying they should run away with the league, but they should be close to it. Like, I think the only team that can compete with them if Clemson's at their best is Miami, if Miami is at their best, and I think that's a big if. So Clemson is there's not really a weakness on this team. Maybe the running back position, but you've got Cade Klubnik, another guy who's in the running to be the first quarterback taken. You've got 4 outstanding receivers. You've got an offensive line that returns most of its starts from a year ago. You've got 2 defensive linemen, and Peter Woods and TJ Parker, who could each be top 10 picks. You've got a linebacking core that's really talented with Sammy Brown, who's from up the road in Jefferson, a guy who didn't really know what he was doing last year and was phenomenal last year in the ACC. And then you got 2 corners that are going to play in the NFL. One of them is Avion Terrell, who's draft eligible this year. So it's AJ Terrell's little brother, and he's been phenomenal. So I just think this Clemson team is loaded. I think LSU should be as well, and it should be a really good matchup.
All right, Roddy, but you talk about Klubnik, and you just talked about Clemson. I want to talk about Klubnik more, though. I'm not a believer that he is a guy that can take them to a national title. Look, I've just seen him kind of seemingly have bad moments when they needed him the most. The South Carolina game, for example. Why should I believe in Cade Klubnik?
I think that South Carolina game is sort of a Rorschach test for what you think of Cade Klubnik. He was phenomenal for most of that game. Maybe not phenomenal. He was phenomenal in the Texas game. He was really good at most of the South Carolina game. The interception at the end, it's sort of a freak thing. Like, he scrambles, he gets out, it bounces off his running back's hip. The throw is maybe, you know, a foot to 6 inches off the mark, and it ends up in the guy's hands. Stuff like that happens. It's a bad look. It's bad timing, but it's not like he made the wrong decision. He just didn't execute on the throw. I think if you look at the development of Cade Klubnik, that's why you'd believe. You look at where he was 2 years ago, look at where he was in the Georgia game last year, and look at the improvement over the course of the year. He's a guy who's matured. He's a guy that's gotten a lot more comfortable in that offense with Garrett Riley. So I think that he is poised to take a big step. And while we have seen a lot of him, and some of the moments have not been great, I think the improvement is why you would believe. But ultimately, like, I mean, who in the country do you believe in? Like, there's no guy right now, I think, if you look at the national landscape, where you'd say, yep, I completely am putting my faith in that guy. And if you are, then it's projection, because, you know, the top quarterbacks in the country, the Garrett Nussmeyers, the Cade Klubniks, the Drew Allers, the Carson Becks, like, all of them have had bad moments because they stuck around so long that we've seen them through the ups and the downs.
We are joined by former Georgia Tech running back and now ESPN college football analyst Roddy Jones. Roddy, I had a fair or foul question for these guys a couple days ago, and it was, could Georgia Tech have a 10-win season? Now, look, Mike and Bo didn't completely shy away from it, but it wasn't an absolutely yes. What do you think about that?
The way you phrased it, then it's an absolute yes. Now, if you'd have phrased it, will they have a 10-win season, then I would back off. But I think the way you phrased it, could they? Absolutely. Like, there's no reason with that schedule that you couldn't do it. The ACC schedule, for the first time in what seems like forever, is very friendly to Georgia Tech. And the rest of the schedule, obviously you get Clemson in the conference, you get Georgia in the non-con. Those two are behemoths, and I'm not saying that Georgia Tech is going to beat them, although I do think they could upset one of them. Georgia Tech has been a big game hunting team. They've been phenomenal against ranked teams, and just look at the way they played Georgia at the end of last year. But the rest of the schedule is very friendly. I mean, you go to Colorado a year after Shador Sanders and Travis Hunter leave. So you get them at a good time, a time of rebuilding. They're going to have a new quarterback, and I don't know that they've named a starter yet. I don't think they have. But it would be Caden Salter. I would expect it to be Caden Salter, rather than Juju Lewis, who we will probably see at some point this year, but I would imagine you'd go with the experience. They've got a ton to replace on defense, and the receiving core as well. Now, the receiving core should be good, but obviously they've replaced a lot of the production from a year ago. But this Georgia Tech team is experienced at the quarterback position, at the running back position, on the offensive line. They'll be really explosive at the skill. I think the biggest question for Georgia Tech this year is, can they create more negative plays on defense? Can they create more turnovers? And can they be better in the red zone? And if you're able to do those three really simple things, I mean, everybody can do that. I say that very sarcastically, because everybody walks in this year, every year, and says, hey, we want to create negative plays. We want to be great in the red zone. And we want to create turnovers. But Georgia Tech was really bad at their bottom five and all three of those categories a year ago. So they can. Will they? They've got to improve on defense and not have the letdowns that they've been prone to the last few years.
Roddy, Alabama heads down to Tallahassee here in week one. Now, if you got to me in 2026, January 2026, and you looked back and you said, Florida State only had four wins, I'd have said, well, should have seen that coming. If you get to me that same time and say, hey, Florida State had 11 wins, I'd say, well, we should have seen that coming. I have no idea what to expect out of Tallahassee. I'm not sure anybody does at this point.
Mike, that is the accurate way to feel about Florida State right now. I was just down there, watched their practice for the ACC Network Roadshow, summer road trip, and I came away with it thinking this team could be. I think 11 wins is probably a little rich for my blood, because they play Clemson, they play Miami, they play Bama, they play Florida. I think at best they split those games. So. And if they don't slip up along the way, that puts you at 10 wins. I think more likely is that they're in that 8-win range. Now, they are talented. A lot of it's going to be determined by how good Tommy Castellanos is. And we remember the flashes of Tommy Castellanos, but statistically, by QBR, quarterback rating, he was the worst quarterback in the ACC a year ago. And I understand the change of offense affected him, but like it shouldn't affect you to be worse than the Stanford quarterbacks. Like that, it was really bad. So he's going to have to improve. He's going to have to take care of the ball more. He's turned the ball over a ton the past two seasons, and I think they're going to play to his strengths with Gus Malzahn, something that that offense wasn't built to do at Boston College a year ago. But again, I mentioned Gus Malzahn, the head coach at UCF, a step down to take the offensive coordinator job at Florida State. So you would imagine that that offense would be revitalized, although I really respected Mike Norvell as a play caller. That offense was terrible last year. So you'd expect them to be better. They're going to be talented at the skill. I don't know how deep they are. But the other thing that they have to do, I think they dropped the first one to Bama. You just can't let Bama beat you more than once if that were to happen. And if you win it, you can't let Bama, the Bama hangover happen where you drop a game later on. But it's one of the most fascinating teams in the country.
Roddy, I know you probably love predictions these days, but you know Phil Still's got Penn State. That's his number one team. Who's Roddy Jones's number one team? Who do you think is going to take it all?
I do not trust Penn State, I'll tell you that. And I think they are incredibly talented. I saw them in the playoff game against SMU in person, and they look the part at most positions. Drew Aller, I think, has all the talent in the world. But they haven't beat Ohio State since 2016. Like, how do you trust them to win a national championship when there's that hard a ceiling on Penn State? Like, when Michigan and Ohio State are good, and now Oregon's in the league, when those three teams are good – And good means they're top five teams, Penn State doesn't beat them. So until Penn State can get over that hump, I don't know how you can trust them. If you were to hold my feet to the fire and say, who do I think wins it all? I would probably go Alabama. I know a lot of people are on the Texas train, and I wouldn't argue with you significantly there. I just think Bama has more answers. They've got a phenomenal receiving core. The offensive line should be one of the best in the country. The defensive line should be really good, and the defense should be good at all three levels. And then the quarterback is the question, and that's a massive question, but everybody's got massive questions. Because when you look at Texas, like they're replacing a lot of production in the offensive line, replacing a lot of production at the receiver position, replacing a lot of production on the defensive line. And they should be able to replace all those guys. It's Texas. They've recruited well. But I just wonder if something goes wrong, like if one receiver doesn't pan out, how does that go? And then I like Clemson more than Penn State. I think the championship DNA is still there. I think that the weaknesses on this team are so minuscule that they'll be in the running too. But on paper, I can see why people like Penn State. I just don't trust them yet.
Good stuff, man. I think I join you and everybody else in saying I'm ready to get this thing kicked off. Let's go play some football.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The week zero slate's it's great at the top because Iowa State and Kansas State are two of the best teams in the Big 12. That'll be a phenomenal game, and then there's some other ones that are intriguing if you're a sicko like me and have to watch it all day.
We're sickos, man. That's former Georgia Tech running back and now ESPN college football analyst Roddy Jones. Thanks for hanging out with us, buddy.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Good stuff there from Roddy. When we get back, we'll talk some Falcons. Will McFadden of AtlantaFalcons.com joined me. The final preseason roster is out for the Atlanta Falcons. Any big surprises? I got one for you. You'll hear that conversation next with our buddy Will McFadden on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and on the Odyssey app. Back with you here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you until 10 o'clock. Right now, we're going to head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our good buddy, Will McFadden, senior writer and editor for AtlantaFalcons.com. Will, the third and final preseason depth chart has arrived. I saw you posted that earlier today. One thing that stands out to me that I want to pick your brain on here is what has Jordan Fuller over Xavier Watts right now for that second safety spot?
Yeah, Chris, you know, I think it's probably at this point experience a little bit. Mostly, but honestly, like, I expect them. We talk a lot about the fronts being rotated through. I expect them to rotate pretty heavily at the safety position as well. So, like, it may honestly be a little bit of semantics here. Like, it could purely just be that you got to have somebody at two and you got to have somebody at three. But I would look at the safety position as a four-man deep rotation, depending on the game and the role and what's needed, because I think DeMarco Helms has a role on this team as well. So whoever is out there on the first snap of week one, I don't think is going to be as telling as what the final snap counts are at the end of that first game, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. And same question about the depth at cornerback. There's a lot of guys that have flashed throughout camp. You got your Lamar Jacksons, your Kobe Bryants, your Natrone Brooks. And then you have a guy like Clark Phillips who hasn't been able to really hit the field. And then they bring in a guy like CJ Henderson. That's a lot of bodies for not a lot of positions. How do you think that shakes out?
Yeah, it is one of the camp battles that I think I'm the most curious in, with one preseason game left to go. It seemed like early on, Natrone Brooks and Lamar Jackson were really stepping up and taking over those kind of key reserve roles. Natrone Brooks has continued that. You know, he had a pick in the second preseason game. He had another pick in practice yesterday. So he's playing really well right now. On the other side, I think Lamar Jackson kind of had an opposite game of Natrone Brooks. He got targeted a lot. He gave up a lot of passes, which is going to happen. You know, when one guy's shutting him down, you got to go somewhere with the ball. But I don't think he performed as well as he would have liked to. So that does open the door for somebody like CJ Henderson, who is new but has that high pedigree. And, you know, there's familiarity, I think, with what he's going to be asked to do. Clark Phillips is really the key question mark. And when you're looking at the 53-man roster cuts, like, he is one of the guys, I think, really on the bubble. And what may decide it for him is what he has already shown to this coaching staff. This is a group with Jerry Gray, with Justin Hood, Raheem Morris. You know, they can evaluate defensive backs. What has he shown on tape? They're going to know what the plan is this year, and how do they feel about his ability to translate into that role, because he isn't able right now to show it on the field.
What's the latest on Jalen Walker?
Yeah, you know, I wish that, like, Jalen had been able to be out there in more of these open practices, in, you know, more of the snaps for the preseason game, because when he has been out there, he's looked really solid. It just kind of seems like lately it's been every other day or so. All right, where is he? Did he practice in full team? You know, no, he didn't, things like that. So it seems a groin is the most recent after a minor hamstring. Again, both things they're fixable. And when you get them fixed, you know, they may go away, but they also can linger. So I think given the nature of both of these, you're going to really want to take it easy and kind of play it safe with the real games that are about to matter down the pipe. But it stinks, because the way that they've been using James Pierce Jr. in the preseason and having him out there a lot, it would be fun to have Jalen Walker kind of on the other side of him.
Linebacking core, level of concern about depth?
You know, I kind of think that the NFL is a place where you can't have, like, high level depth at every single spot. An inside linebacker is probably one of the places where you can get away with morphing your defense around to have that player fill a little bit more of one role. Caden Ellis is rare, right? The guy who is able to be in there and do a bunch of everything, they don't grow on trees. So to some degree, a lot of defenses have kind of more defined roles, and they may use a safety to be that versatile piece. They may have an edge rusher to kind of, like, all of that is in play, I think, when you consider the depth. And when we look at the individual roles guys can play, I think J.D. Bertrand has actually really fared well as a run defender, at least in practice. I think in the last game was not his best, but I think Josh Woods is a really good special teams player, a high energy guy on the defense. He's a decent run defender as well. They have had D'Angelo Malone kind of working the edge and the inside. I think there you're talking a little bit more about that Caden Ellis-like versatility, at least in a pass rush sense. And then I really do expect just Divine Diablo and Caden Ellis to be playing a ton of snaps for this defense. We know that Jeff Ulbrich historically has not been shy about playing a guy like Foye Luikun like every single snap on defense. So if there's one spot where there may not be a huge rotation, it could be inside linebacker. So for that reason, I'm not as concerned about depth there because I do like two or three names. And then Troy Anderson, you know, hopefully we'll get back in the mix at some point.
You think there's a chance Braylon Trice doesn't make the 53?
That would shock me. It honestly would, because I do think that even though he has not had a flashy kind of return to the practice field, he has looked good. You know, in the moments that I've just watched him kind of going through drills, he doesn't look any noticeably different than any of the other guys. And we're talking about somebody who is coming off of a full year, season long injury. Now, bearing that in mind, I wouldn't expect him to. Yeah, I'm expecting him to make the 53-man roster. If he does, and if he's playing a little bit, I wouldn't expect him to go gangbusters right out of the gates, just because I do think it takes time to come back from an injury like this. But I'm not worried about Braylon Trice at all, based on what I've seen, and it would surprise me if he did make the 53.
All right, now I think we can all be consensus on this, that the number one area of concern right now is probably, if not definitely, backup offensive line. What's going on there, in your opinion?
Yeah, you know, I've got a kind of 53-man roster prediction coming out Friday, Chris, and beginning to go through that exercise today, and it made me very appreciative that I still have one more practice ahead of me before I have to publish that particular article, because I plan on just lasering in on that second team offensive line, because right now I kind of don't have a very good read on how they might go with this. And that is very different than last year, where I was having a hard time making a couple of cuts. Like, I thought Kyle Hinton and Javon Gwynn were two of the standouts of preseason last year. And this year it's kind of been a little bit opposite. You know, Kyle Hinton has had a couple of penalties. Javon Gwynn now bumping up to second team center. You know, we're seeing, I think, a little bit of the length and size deficiencies come to the fore. That's just really on the interior. I like a guy in Joshua Gray. Who knows if he's sticking on the 53 as an undrafted free agent. You know, maybe you feel comfortable about getting him back on your practice squad. And then you look at tackle. Without Storm Norton, you got Brandon Parker, you got Elijah Wilkinson, two veterans, guys with size. You know, if they do keep players, it would make sense if it were maybe one of those two guys as just, hey, at least we know we've got a veteran. We've got a bye week in week 5. We can figure it out kind of early on if we have to, but here's somebody who has at least seen action. And then you really hope your starters don't force you into that depth mode early. But I could honestly see, Chris, kind of like a lighter group of offensive linemen on that initial 53-man roster, and then a heavy group on your practice squad that they want to get a look at, and maybe you add one or two early on in the season to that roster and you readjust from there.
You think there's any chance Nathan Carter slips past Carlos Washington for RB3?
He made a really good case in that second preseason game. I thought that two of the runs, really, one gets called back, a little bit of a questionable call, IMO, but the second one showed really exactly what the model is, and it's what you're hoping Bijan and Tyler are doing. That is another key spot. It's like Carlos Washington, I thought, was looking really good in camp before the injury. We've seen what he can do in the past. I think the coaching staff really likes him. I think he's trusted. It would not shock me if at some point Carlos Washington finds himself back in a Falcons uniform if he's not on the 53. And it wouldn't shock me, honestly, if they just keep two running backs on the 53. I think Nathan Carter is making the strongest push. Could he end up on the practice squad? Who knows? But of the three guys, Dotson, Carter, and Corbin, Carter has definitely been the standout.
Same thing about the final couple of receiver spots. It seems like all the speculation, Will, as we're talking with Will McFadden, AtlantaFalcons.com senior writer and editor, has been that it's David Sills and Casey Washington, with Chris Blair falling behind.
It feels like that kind of right now, and I have flip-flopped personally. Like, I'll raise my hand. Sometimes my initial take, I get it wrong. I kind of came around a little bit like, all right, David Sills, huh? I need to wrap my head around that because I have been in the Chris Blair kind of camp because of the youth, the physicality. He does offer some stuff, but David Sills, like, the more you watch him, I totally understand where he fits into a version of this offense. And that is clearly something that the Falcons are interested in, given the way that they've used him and kind of the early targets we saw in that second preseason game and what he did with him. So David Sills, you know, has kind of won me over a little bit. Casey Washington, though, has been arguably the standout of training camp, maybe non-James Pierce Jr. category, because he has been the key guy who stepped up in the absence of Darnell Mooney, and he has made the most of that opportunity and then some. His connection with Michael Penix Jr. has really been strong. He's made some tough catches. His separation has been very noticeable. So I think Casey is absolutely a lock. To me, it comes down to David Sills, Chris Blair, and then I wonder about Jamal Agnew as well. He came in as a veteran returner. He just has not been out there on the field as he's been dealing with a little bit of an injury. So we'll see. I'm expecting a couple, like one or two or three shocks on this 53-man roster cutdown. I just don't have a good sense of like where they're going to come from, which is going to make it fun, honestly, Chris.
Raheem Morris continues with his strategy of not playing either quarterback in the preseason, meaning Kirk Cousins and Michael Penix Jr. Are you of the camp that believes that preseason reps are important, or do you think Coach is on the right track with not risking the injury?
Man, do you know how many times I wish I could like answer this question knowing how the first 3 weeks of the season turn out? Because that's kind of what it feels like. If they get off to a rolling start, then it's going to be like, hey, great, you got them here healthy, and it's awesome. If they struggle, then it's going to be an easy thing to point to. I think they've done a great job simulating the moments that are going to matter in games during practice. And I do think that there is a lot of rationale behind keeping your most important guys healthy in and away from environments that you aren't fully in control of. And they are a big believer of, in these practice conditions, you can control things to a greater degree and have a relatively higher degree of safety guaranteed for some of these guys. So for that reason, that makes a lot of sense. If you're not going to have a lot of your starters out there, if Drake London's not out there, if Darnell's certainly not out there, your offensive line, then I don't know the value of those reps for Michael Penix, and how are they greater than a team session. So those are obviously decisions that every coaching staff evaluates and thinks about. Some go one way, some go the other. And every year, I think you can find examples if you really want to make either side of it. Honestly, it's up to the coaching staff to get these guys ready to go week one. And if they feel that they can do that without having them out there and risking them in preseason games, then I think we'll see when the ball's kicked off at 1 p.m. on Sunday, week one.
All right, before I let you go, I've been asking this of everybody I've been chatting with lately. There's been a couple of practice reports where Michael Penix Jr. has missed a throw or two, being generous, finishing somewhere along the lines of like a 10 for 17. Anything to be concerned about there?
I kind of think it's to be expected a little bit. Like, I don't think it's concerning because I think it comes with a young quarterback who these were some of the nitpicks coming out of the draft, right? It was, he's got an awesome arm. Sometimes he needs to dial it in on some of these more drive throws. They'll sail a little bit, but I also do think right now I get the sense that he's working through some things. And I would highly recommend Albert Breer had a great piece today, I think, that went out that kind of noted some plays last season that I had even missed, where it's more the processing speed for Michael Penix Jr. that I think is highly underrated because we talk about his physical tools. As long as that is going to be at a high enough level, you can live with some of these missed throws that you feel like he shouldn't be making, because that stuff can get fixed over time. It is early. I don't expect him to go out there and be completing 85% of his passes. As long as he's able to hit some explosive plays move this offense down the field and string enough of the plays together, he's got a great enough supporting cast. I kind of think that should be the expectation. And if he has a game where he finishes 14 of 28, you know, I'll live with that, because I think the next one he'll bounce back pretty strong.
We'll appreciate the time. As always, we'll be checking you out at AtlantaFalcons.com. We'll talk soon.
Of course, Chris. Anytime.
All right. That is Will McFadden there of AtlantaFalcons.com. Unbelievable. Oren, I'm going to give you guys a Braves update when we get back. This team is something else. I don't know how to explain what's going on. In the past 2 days, everything that's gone on, from Spencer Strider to the scoring to everything else that's been going on, I don't even know how to explain it. But we'll try to do that next as we wrap up shop here on a Tuesday. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app. It's Chris Thomas tonight. The Atlanta Braves are the most, well, let me put it this way. The 2025 Atlanta Braves are the most frustrating team I've covered since I moved to Atlanta. And Oren, in November, it will be five years that I've been here in Atlanta, which is crazy. I still think about it all the time. 5 years ago, I still remember leaving home like it was yesterday, coming into these very empty studios in the middle of COVID. It was me, our old boss at the time, and Mike Conti. We were the only three people in here every single day. Last chance for romance on Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you until 10 o'clock. It is now, Oren Romaine, 10 to 9. The Atlanta Braves have come all the way back.
Bryce Elder. Yeah, you just spot the White Sox a good 8-9 runs in both games yesterday and today before you decide to start offensing, if you will.
Bryce Elder did his best Spencer Strider impression, gave up 8 runs. It looked like this was another game where it was over before it started. Nay. Ronald Acuna Jr. had an RBI. Baldwin had an RBI walk. Albie singled the center. I almost said Francisco Alvarez. Nacho Alvarez. Francisco Alvarez, by the way, the catcher for the Mets, he gone. He's hurt. He needs to have a procedure on his thumb. And we'll see how they do. I mean, Oren, you want to talk about struggling?
Bruh.
They have. For that payroll? Oh, my goodness. If you're Steve Cohen, how do you sleep at night? Oh, wait, you have $30 billion in your bank account. I think you're just fine. But let me ask you this, Oren. When you see the last two nights, does it make your blood boil even more that these games have been what they've been, or are you apathetic at this point because of the way the season's gone?
No, there's some blood boiling there, I guess, and just to see. I'm happy Michael Harris has turned it around this season. I didn't want to see a season that look like the first half for it to go the entire way.
Do you feel like, I mean, we're here every day. Do you feel like there was a section of the fan base rooting for him to fail?
I wouldn't say rooting for him to fail, but they were openly sort of opining for him to maybe you need to figure this out somewhere else. If not here, maybe in the minors or maybe on another team. Something needs to be done because – maybe that's just the amount of concern and care they have for this guy that they wanted to see him turn it around. I mean, you can be dismissive. Like, they're very dismissive about Ozzie Albies.
Yeah.
There are a lot of guys on this Braves team that she's like, oh, Bryce Elder, go ahead and get rid of him.
Ozzie, it's been a couple of years, though. That's the thing with Ozzie. There's a track record with Ozzie now that says he can have questions about the future of him. And that's the thing. He's still so young. He should have a lot of good baseball left, but he's also suffered some really, really bad injuries.
But it's like, Bryce Elder, nobody cares what happens to him after this season,
well,
I guess.
I mean,
Rizal Iglesias, there's no concern about what happens to him. Aaron Bummer, a lot of these guys, what happens past this season is best served not on this Braves team. Michael Harris, though, sort of, he's that guy that you. as badly as you want him to get it figured out somewhere, you want him to get it figured out, or you wanted him to get it figured out so he could be a contributor here. Because, I mean, if I was to give you – if I was to ask you the four players, position players from this Braves team, or the five position players from this Braves team that you want to see them build with going forward.
Yeah.
Michael Harris is going to be one of those
guys. Yeah, it's Harris, Olsen, Riley, Acuna.
You throw Drake Baldwin in that mix now? Yeah, yeah.
That's probably the guys that you're talking about. And with Spencer – let me ask you this. With Spencer Strider struggling the way that he has, Sale's age, Lopez's uncertainty, he's only had one good year. Smith Shauver out for the year. We don't know when Schwellenbach's coming back. Who are the future stalwarts of the starting staff?
Not here. I tell you that much
well,
right now.
Maybe Hurston Waldrip.
Waldrip has pitched well. He's learned how to work that change up and curveball. So maybe they're in the minors right now. Maybe it's a J.R. Ritchie.
Everybody seems to be convinced Schwellenbach is like the future.
Maybe it's Spencer
too. He fractured his damn elbow and nobody knows how.
It looked really good. And you hope that he's a good enough athlete that he can bounce back from this. But again, it's an arm thing. So you don't know. You don't know what's going to happen next with him.
Is Smith Shauver going to have the same stuff in 2027?
You don't know.
I have no idea.
Ronaldo Lopez, what's he going to be next year? What's Grant Holmes going to be in 2 years when he returns? So you can ask that question. And the answer is probably going to be guys who are not on the Braves' big league roster at the moment.
Who's your setup guy next year? Not here. Who's your closer next year?
Not here.
Not here, unless it's Strider. Unless they
turn that around, yeah.
Unless they do that.
Who's your long inning guy next year?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Bryce Elder? Man, yeah. I don't know. That's what I'm saying, man. It is hard times that here.
There you go, as Dusty Rhodes would say.
Dusty Rhodes would say. And I don't think enough people are acknowledging that, Orin. I think the lineup will be fine. We've seen what we were joking around in the break. How many teams can score 18 runs in two games and lose both?
You're going to have
it's probably not
18,
happened a
19
lot.
Runs, going to finish with 20 yeah. hits over two games.
And lose both.
And have two losses. What?
Because your pitching staff has given up 23 earned runs.
To the worst team in Major League Baseball.
In a two-game at home. By the way,
at home,
in a two-game stretch.
At home,
you give up 13 and then 10, respectively, to the White Sox. And you want to know a fun game, Orin?
What's that?
Name a White Sox.
I know one because he had a home run tonight. Kyle Teal.
And I only knew one coming into the series.
Luis Robert.
Luis Robert. And cheating a little bit, I know who Mike Talkman is because he started his career with the Yankees. But that's it.
Three guys.
But that's it.
There's 26 dudes on that team, on that roster.
That's it. And
three dudes. And by the way, those three two dudes, Teal and Rob, they've hit home runs in this series.
Oh,
multiple
I do
home
know,
runs.
I lied. I know one more.
Who you got?
Andrew Benintendi.
Oh, okay.
That's it. But that's it. Yeah. Out of the entire lineup, three guys. Not good. There's
no.
They have a Baldwin. He's playing third base. I don't know if they're related.
I doubt it. What's this Baldwin's name? This is Brooks Baldwin. No, I don't think they're related.
No, I don't think so. Just based on appearance.
I do not think they were related.
Unless there's some serious extended family stuff going on.
But yeah, this is a team of – it's an 80-loss team. An 80-loss team has come into your building and put up 23 runs.
23 runs in two games.
What?
One of those games was started by Spencer Strider.
What?
Who people had Cy Young hopes for a couple
he
of years
make
ago.
Make it out of the third. Your starters have thrown a combined what? In two games.
Oh.
Bryce went 4 2/3 tonight. So that was a whole inning better than, almost two innings better than Spencer Strider.
Yeah,
Spencer went three last
okay,
night.
Okay, so all the stats. So what? Seven innings pitched. What, 17 earned runs? over your starters in the last couple of games. Oh, my goodness. You can't make it up.
This is the guy, Bryce Elder, two years ago. Hey, man.
All-star.
This is your future third starter right here,
all-star.
Man.
All-star.
Dude was kicking butt the first half of that season. Had a sub-3 ERA. was just doing all these things, all these great things for your staff, and then
I'm about to throw it in the Wayback Machine, Orin, but I know you'll understand the reference. He's like the pitching version of Kevin Moss.
That's a very good call.
You like that?
That's a very good call.
Yeah, you like that. Still sharp 4 hours in. Yeah, how about that? That's but it's so sad what we're talking about. And the stat to ruin all stats is the one from yesterday. In Spencer Strider's last 11 innings pitched over three starts, he's given up 30 hits and 20 earned runs in 11 innings pitched. It's not good, Bob. It's not. Not what you want.
Not great, Chris.
All right. It is right now the, what are we in? The
bottom of the eighth.
Bottom of the eighth inning. Yeah, Braves are trying to tie this thing up at 10. We'll see what happens. Making some noise on the base paths here. But when we get back, we'll continue the show until the Atlanta Baseball postgame show comes your way following the last out. Jeff Centel is going to stop by Dog Nation, all things UGA. If you're a dog fan, you don't want to miss the latest report from Athens. Coming up next, appreciate Big O, appreciate all my guests for the evening. I'll be back with you tomorrow. Same deal, Braves and White Sox. Oh boy, we'll see what happens. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what the long-term future looks like, but for the short term, again, I think there are three options. You let him figure it out. He'll get a couple more starts this season, and then you work on the offseason. Door number two, move him to the pen. See what you have there. And then door number three, shut him down. So a couple of things to chew on. I'll take your calls when we get back. 404-726-0929. 404-726-0929. How fun was this one, Braves country? Were you able to just enjoy it? Or did it make you even more frustrated that this isn't the team that we see night in and night out? And then what do you do with Spencer Strider? We'll take your calls on that, 404-726-0929. It's Chris Thomas Turtle with you until the top of the hour on the Atlanta Baseball Postgame Show.
Baseball.
Baseball.
Baseball is America's pastime.
Back to the baseball talk.
This is the Atlanta Baseball Postgame Show with Chris Thomas
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Back with you here on the Atlanta Baseball Postgame Show, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Your chance to call in. 404-726-0929. An amazing win for the Atlanta Braves. 11-10. Drake Baldwin plays hero. They clean up the mess made by Bryce Elder, overcome a 10-4 deficit, and win the game 11-10. Also, Spencer Strider, what do you do with him? You move him to the bullpen? You sit him? Or do you let him just figure it out at the major league level? We're taking your calls on all that. 404-726-0929, 404-726-0929. Did also want you to hear a little bit more from Grant McCauley when he joined Dukes and Bell. They asked him flatly, is it time for a change with the pitching philosophy and the way that they do business?
No, I don't really think it's that, because the biggest thing that the Braves, on the whole, and something that I would point to and say, where can Rick Kranitz help? Well, you need to have as much of the staff out there and healthy as possible. And unfortunately, in today's baseball, there's just no way to get away from the fact that arm injuries are going to happen. Because when you chase velocity, and Spencer Strider has talked about this, and I don't know if we got enough time to get into a lot of his thoughts about, you know, where exactly he stands on all of this, because clearly he's a hard-throwing pitcher with a, you know, high RPM slider who is kind of the quintessential strikeout pitcher of this generation, and was the best strikeout pitcher in all of baseball not long ago. But to get back to your question, like, I don't think it's not a coaching thing, and I don't know that there's really anything that anybody outside of Spencer Strider can specifically do for him right now. The Chris Sale flukish injury, the Schwellenbach fluky injury, you know, weird things that you just can't plan for. Five starting pitchers on the 60-day IL. I mean, you can't necessarily judge Rick Kranitz on the performance of guys who can't seem to be healthy enough to get out there every fifth day. I think it's just individually Strider's kind of on a road that he has to travel himself, and it's going to be some tough miles. I think that he's come further than people may realize, but this competition of, you know, getting these pitches back to the level that he expects, I think it's just going to take some time. And that's just, it's not a fun process. It's not fun to watch. It's certainly not fun to serve up home runs, because this has been a very un-Spencer Strider-like performance, the last three outings in particular. I don't think it's going to continue just with no end in sight, and he's never going to find his way back. But he's definitely in the valley right now with some of the things I'm sure CJ talked about. I heard Tom Glavin talking on the broadcast yesterday and basically saying, hey, I didn't throw as hard as he did, so I don't have some of the problems he had. But I understand what he's going through, and it's not easy to sort it out and make these adjustments in season. I think it's just going to take time. And again, that may not be the answer anybody's looking for, but I do think that there is an awful lot of talent still there in the right arm of Spencer Strider. It's just going to be how he approaches it to get the max results from what he's got.
Yeah. And again, so what do you do now? You let him just keep running it out there to just try to figure it out? Do you put him in the bullpen, see if it makes sense there, see what you got? Or do you just sit him? Say, dude, it is not working out right now, and we are going to get you ready for 2026. One more thing from Grant McCauley. Michael Harris homered again tonight, made an outstanding play on the final out of the game. He has just been on fire the last couple of weeks, and Grant McCauley talked about it with Dukes and Bell.
Yeah, and how about being one of the top three hitters in Major League Baseball over the last month after being not even arguably, but statistically, one of the probably five worst everyday players in Major League Baseball in the first half. It has been a wild swing in the other direction. And I got to talk at length with Michael yesterday before the game, kind of like what the impetus was for the stance change. And he said, look, I mean, I worked and worked and worked, and I tried everything else. And the stance I was using, it wasn't just easy to drop because it had given me really good results over the past 3 years, but it was just time to try something different. And interestingly enough, he said he had conversations with various guys, obviously works with Tim Hyers and the Braves hitting coach side of things, and also a conversation with Chipper Jones. And I think that kind of led to getting a little bit of the feedback that he needed to just go out there and try something to get himself back and comfortable again in the box. And he was. He opened his stance slightly. He's obviously raised his hands. And he said, I believe what Chipper told him was that it's easier to swing down to drive the ball up than it is to swing up and drive the ball out, basically. So correcting his swing, and that may seem like a really quizzical way of looking at it, but it makes sense when you think about the force and the velocity and what you need in able to square the ball up more. And Michael Harris is squaring the ball up with great regularity now. I believe I looked at the StatCast leaders for yesterday in all of Major League Baseball. He either had the hardest hit ball or the second hardest hit ball of the entire league yesterday. That's not a list we were seeing him on too terribly often over the first 3 months. So I like what I'm seeing. I think that he's made those adjustments. He's got some confidence flowing again. That's meaningful. I think everybody can understand how much easier it is to do your job when you're feeling confident about it. And it's just great to see this, because what he's done in small amount of time now, we're talking about just over a month since right before the second half began, to raise his batting average, I believe at this point it's up over 260, so 55, nearly 60 points in 31 games. That is a heck of a ride for Michael Harris, and I think everybody's glad to see it.
And he only added to that tonight with the accomplishments that he had in this game, hitting the ball over the fence again. And then if you didn't see it, just Google it or search it on Twitter. He made an amazing catch to end the game in the ninth inning for the Atlanta Braves. Again, 404-726-0929 is the number to weigh in on Spencer Strider. What do you do with him, or reacting to tonight's crazy 11-10 victory? Let's close out the show with a little conversation about the Braves with my good buddy Danny Vietti of the Believe Network and CBS Sports. Danny, can you believe right now that the Atlanta Braves season has gone the way that it's gone, and the recent swinging of back and forth, wins and losses?
Not really. I mean, the talent's always been there. It's never been a question of talent. It's just been a matter of fact that they just haven't gotten it done with situational baseball this year. They haven't played good, clean baseball. They haven't stayed healthy. They haven't hit with runners in scoring position. I've used the same term with the Braves this year, and that's Murphy's Law. Whatever can happen will happen, for better or for worse. So it was never a question of talent for the Braves. This lineup is stacked, when healthy, of course. This rotation was stacked before all the injuries started piling up. The bullpen kind of had question marks coming into the season and has had question marks throughout the season. But roster as a whole is never a question of talent. It was only a matter of time before, especially 162-game season, something was going to go right for the Braves. So a little too late, probably, at this juncture. But at least you like to see a little bit of fight from the Braves, who inevitably probably their season is likely over.
What do you make of a player like Michael Harris, who over the last couple of weeks, again, has showcased his vast talent with an OPS over 1,000, making great plays in the outfield? He raised his batting average nearly 50 points in a calendar month. Why can't he do this consistently, Danny?
Yeah, I mean, injury certainly had a crucial role in this as well. I mean, a guy that started the season injured, last season dealt with injuries. I mean, he's dealt with injuries a lot of his career, albeit a short career thus far. I just think it's important for the Braves in particular, including Harris, to just get some sort of momentum heading towards next season, because you never want to have a lost season. I know fans right now especially are thinking it is a lost season. Any time that the Braves don't make the playoffs when they are seemingly in a championship window, you tend to use those terms of lost season. But you want your hitters having some momentum going into next year. Hopefully Matt Olson can kind of carry some consistency into next season. Hopefully Baldwin can carry this momentum that he's built himself this season. Likewise, Michael Harris, he's on pace over this last month to have an OPS up over 900 over the last 30 games. His power numbers are coming alive. He's showing off the speed and athleticism that we've all come to love. Defensively, he's been putting on highlight reels out there in center field lately. So another guy that is immensely talented, another guy on the Braves that has dealt with injuries. But again, you don't want it to be a lost season. Hopefully Michael Harris, along with some other Braves players, can create some momentum heading into next season so that hopefully they can come into 26 healthy and feeling confident at the dish.
Couple of pitching questions here, one good, one bad. We'll start with the good. Have you liked what you've seen from the young guy, Hurston Waldrop? He was a high draft pick of the Braves, got a little cup of coffee last season, but really struggled. But now in his couple opportunities this year, has really made a name for himself in a rotation that desperately needs it.
Yeah, here's the thing with Atlanta is I never question whether they're going to be able to corral enough starting pitchers to get quality starts. I mean, the Braves were able to make Bryce Elder into an all-star 2 years ago. They were able to put together a pitching rotation to start this season with half of them on the injured list. They came into the season without Strider, without Ronaldo Lopez. I mean, they were limping into the season. And they were able to get some of these guys back into the fold, and unfortunately Schwellenbach back on the IL, Chris Sale on the IL. But overall, the Braves have actually done a decent job starting pitching-wise, especially considering how many guys they have on this injured list to keep them in ballgames and potentially give them a chance to win ballgames. I don't think too many people would have looked at this rotation as is with Strider, Elder, Waldrop, Fetty, and Wendt. That's not exactly a winning formula starting pitching-wise. But Atlanta, all things considered, again, they've given themselves at least chances to win ballgames. And that's with half of their rotation, if not more, on the injured list. So, again, kind of going back to what I said earlier with Michael Harris, hopefully Waldrop is giving the team a little bit of momentum going into next season. 17 innings pitched this year, 1.02 ERA, 17 strikeouts across those 17 innings pitched. So it's a small sample size, but, again, you don't want to use that same terminology of lost season. Hopefully Waldrop, Harris, a lot of these Braves young guys can kind of get some momentum heading into next year.
Speaking of the flip side now, Spencer Strider, not good again tonight through three innings pitched. Danny, in his last three starts, including the three innings tonight, he's given up 26 hits over those three starts. That is unheard of for a guy with Spencer Strider's potential and talent. We know he is dealing with his second major arm surgery, but what do you make of his struggles?
I mean, there's a critical factor here, and that's that some guys coming off the injured list, for whatever reason, are able to get back to their A games immediately. And then there are other players that might take a year to kind of get back into the fold, try and get their mechanics back. And I think Strider, who, yes, sports a 98-plus mile-an-hour fastball, usually when he's at his best, of course, but he's also a guy that really prides himself on his mechanics. It's kind of similar to Jacob DeGrom. DeGrom has dealt with injuries throughout his career, and when he has come back from his arm injuries, including a year ago, by the way, and he struggled getting back into the thick things. Strider and DeGrom, if you go side by side with them mechanically, very similar pitching mechanics and very similar arsenals too. Very similar pitchers, both right-handed, dominant, high-velocity pitchers. But both guys have dealt with injuries in their career. And so certain guys have been able to come back from their Tommy John or whatever UCL injuries that they've dealt with. And some guys are able to just get right back into it and they don't miss a beat. But it also creates a bar that is really not fair to the guys that aren't able to not miss or aren't able to get back to that level. It's totally understandable that Strider, who missed so much time, and a guy that has dealt with injuries this season again after coming off of the arm injury, he just hasn't been able to find that consistency mechanic-wise. You look at his Savant numbers, he's given up hard-hit balls a lot more than he was in previous years as well. That, to me, tells me that his location isn't quite there, and anytime your location, isn't as consistent, typically that has to do with mechanics and confidence as well. So I think it has to do more with reps, consistency, mechanics, and that's something that he will be able to hopefully focus on in the offseason. And offseason, a year ago, where he was probably spent more time doing rehab, this offseason, hopefully he can spend more time getting his consistency back as a mechanical, from a mechanical focal point.
If you're double A this offseason, which camp do you stand in? Try to move Murphy and restock what is a very desperate farm system and maybe a major league piece, or do you keep what is now one of the better catching tandems in MLB with Murphy and Baldwin?
It's a great question. You could go a number of different ways here. I've compared the Atlanta Braves to the 2023 San Diego Padres a number of different times this year. And what the Padres did is they didn't rebuild. They retooled, and they also did get rid of a guy named Juan Soto and traded him to New York. But they were also able to turn Juan Soto into two crucial starting pitchers for them, including Michael King, who was phenomenal come playoff time. And he was probably the X factor in getting San Diego back to the postseason and is another critical factor here in 2025 as well. So, look, the Braves are not – they don't have necessarily a Juan Soto to trade, or at least I hope they don't, because they have Acuna and these guys under contract for a while longer. But if they do decide to trade Sean Murphy, I just hope that it's a retooling, not a rebuilding, because this team still, like I just mentioned at the top of this conversation, immense talent, immense potential. I mean, you take the guys off the injured list, you have a rotation – of Strider, and you include Waldrop and Elder if you want to, but you also have your Reynaldo Lopez, your Chris Sale, your Schwellenbach, your Smith Shavers. Like, that's a legit contending pitching rotation. You look at the lineup wise, when healthy, you got Acuna, you got Profar, Olsen, Baldwin, Ozuna, Harris. I mean, this is a stacked lineup. I think if anything, if you are deciding to trade Sean Murphy, you hope to try and get some bullpen arms to complement your closer, if that is Raisel Iglesias going into next season. So it's not a Juan Soto asset that the Padres had after 2023, but if they do decide to trade Sean Murphy, albeit limited options, probably bullpen is what you look at most that needs most improvement.
Thanks to Danny Vietti. Make sure you check him out, CBS Sports and the Believe Network. Also, Grant McCauley stopped by Dukes and Bell today. And this was one of the more exciting wins of the season, 11-10. Glad to chat about it with you on the Atlanta Baseball Postgame Show. This is Chris Thomas Turtle. I'll talk to you all tomorrow at 6 p.m. right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.